crack formed in the world's crust, weaving off in all directions, seeming to go on and on. "This is quite the tour," I mutter as we cut left up another vein of stairs. Or perhaps I'm just impatient, being herded by a massive feline close enough that I can feel its hot breath puffing against the back of my neck. We take another turn, the air thickening with the rich smell of roasting meat. We move between a tall, lofty entrance framed by bones. Two colossal bones so large they can only belong to one thing. A dragon that died before it had a chance to soar into the sky, curl up, and turn to stone, instead rotting where it fell. My eyes widen as we step past the macabre entrance into a massive chest cavity four times the size as I imagine Rygon's to be. As though the mammoth beast fell many phases ago, its corpse swallowed by the elements. It's been mostly hollowed, bar a few swooping pinnacles reaching for the clefts in the ceiling, holes bored between some of the thick, arching ribs, allowing sunlight to pour down. The ground is pocked with domed tents made of smooth animal hides all stitched together, reminding me of Rygun's saddle blanket, the tents like tumbled boulders, painted to look like the scorched terrain in this part of the world. Likely camouflaging this place from anyone soaring above who might otherwise look down the holes in the ceiling. Clever. Stone arches frame the entry of each dwelling, all so beautifully carved, boasting creatures of every caste, but predominantly dragons, their realness embossed upon the stone in such immaculate detail. A shriek snaps my gaze to the arched walls of the chest cavity littered with fawny caws. Winged beasts less than half the size of an average molten maw, looking like knobbled bulges of leathery stone. Perfectly disguised, were it not for the way their heads swivel on stumpy necks, big, gloomy eyes blinking. One of them loosens from the wall and flits between the pinnacles, screaming, saddle ropes fluttering in its wake. My mind clutches the vision like a newborn babe seeking comfort, seeking an anchor in this place I have no knowledge of. My key to acclimatizing? Don't get bogged down by the overwhelming details. Pick something. Hone my focus. Don't drown. I'm led down a path that wiggles between the tightly packed tents, clusters of silk-swathed females and bare-chested males milling about the space, forging weapons from bits of wood, bronze, or plates of dragon scale bigger than I've ever seen. Others are weaving troves of golden silk thread into draped lengths of material or gathering around smoking fire pits saddled with metal spits, each laden with haunches of roasting meat that season the air with that rich, gamey smell. Though many of them have red hair and bronze, heavily freckled skin, there are also folk with white hair, black hair, brown hair, with skin of all shades. Like folk from all corners of this world have fallen through those holes in the ceiling and found a home in this place. I notice many of the cavity's inhabitants boast tattoos similar to Khan's, but depicting various creatures. Some more of an outline rather than a full, shaded rendering.
"Kolu have koma,"
one of the warriors who led me here bellows, the words seeming to echo through the hushing cavern. Everyone stills, wide eyes taking me in, then the creature following me like a majestic silver shadow I certainly didn't ask for. But here we fucking are. Some of the females cry out, eyes watering as they repeat the words.
"Kolu have koma! Kolu have koma! Kolu have koma!"
Everyone drops their tools, some folk pushing from tents and immediately falling to their knees, kissing the ground, like they're thanking Baldur for something. Aside from my two escorts, myself, and my prowling herder, not a single male, female, or youngling remains upright. A surge of nausea spears up my throat, making the underside of my tongue tingle. I'm not sure if I've upset them or made them really, really happy, but either option is concerning. If they revere me, expectations. If they fear me, death. That's the general formula the world seems to be brewed with, and both those things are heavy time wasters. I've got a male to hunt down and strangle with his own intestines. I don't have time to waste. I pick at the skin on the sides of my nail, cutting another condemning glance at the beast hurting me forward. You're in trouble. It cranks its jaw and yawns, stretching its mouth so wide I could almost crawl down its throat. Nice to see somebody's relaxed. I'm led over a small hump, then down what I can only imagine was once this ancient beast's throat, its knobbled vertebrae protruding from the ground just enough that a bony tunnel is exposed, a hole I imagine once housed the dragon's spinal cord. The way is lit by glowing runes etched into the sides, casting the tunnel in a warm hue. It must have taken great affinity with Baldur to find these remains, to excavate them so precisely without disturbing their position. I'm still marveling as we come to twin flaps of hide hanging from above. My escorts pull them open, stepping aside to give me enough space to pass. I frown, pausing. Not sure I want to go in the... The fate herder headbutts me between the shoulder blades, shoving me through the gap and into the humid embrace of the dragon's massive skull. I cut a glance over my shoulder and scowl at the bossy creature before I take in my curved surroundings etched in more of those luminous runes, the ground lined with leathers painted with an array of colorful dots, streaks, and jagged lines. On the left is a low table that runs the length of the space. Slabs of wood are piled high with hunks of meat being carved up by a white-haired male wielding a huge bronze blade. He pauses the moment he casts his gaze on me, eyes widening, shifting to the beast at my back. He immediately falls to his knees, kissing the ground. It occurs to me that it's probably what I was supposed to do when I first saw the fate herder. Kiss the ground. Instead, I tried to run from it, yelled at it, snarled at it, and essentially told it to fuck off. It'll probably give me a shit fate, and honestly, it's warranted. I've certainly got enough blood on my hands to justify it. I notice a small cluster of golden silk-clad females perched around baskets heaped with the lanky, blade-like foliage I saw from the sky. They're folding them around bits of dried meat, though their hands pause as they look at me, then at my prowling shadow. Their eyes go impossibly round. They, too, kiss the ground before they rise, nipping glances at the entrance while they gather their things and dash out of the way. Frowning, I look over my shoulder, past my fluffy non-friend, eyes bulging. A swell of folk are pouring in between the flaps of hide, splitting both ways, packing the space full on either side of the twin bloodstone thrones at the far end of the space. Not sure how I didn't notice them earlier, given that they're huge, dominant, and so intricately carved, I think they might have taken many Aurora cycles to construct. A female occupies the throne on the right, a babe suckling her breast. Her pale hair pools around her like gushing water. Her skin so fair, I'm certain a single blade of sun would cause her to sizzle like a moon plume caught in the burn. Her bright green eyes widen at the sight of me, then soften with something akin to relief before she looks to the broad male on her right, placing her hand on his arm, squeezing gently. His features are hard and harsh, short beard tailored to his strong jawline, his eyes like mini suns staring out at me from beneath russet brows crunched together in a disbelieving frown. Unlike the other bare-chested males, his broad, freckle-dusted shoulders are draped in strings laden with copper rods, and he wears a bony crown that claws down through his long hair, his ear pierced with a black cuff. I frown. It's the same as the one Khan wears. He passes a wide-eyed glance to the female on his left, placing his hand on hers. They dip their heads our way in combined homage, though I suspect that's more aimed toward the creature that herded me here, considering its mythical status. Certainly not me. Can't be me. I'm wearing a shackle for shit's sake. And there's vomit in my hair. My cheeks heat as I bring the offending tendrils close to my nose and sniff, my face scrunching up at this sour reek. Damn, I thought it was more diluted than that. This is what happens when you don't let me jump in the river, I grind out to my unwanted herder. I'm presented to important folk smelling like bile. Its only response is to leap ahead and do a prowling loop around me, forcing me to stop. Message received, I mutter, and it lumps itself beside me, sitting on its haunches. It lifts a paw, licks it, and swipes at its face with a smooth sort of contentment I certainly don't appreciate, surrounded by strangers, standing in a dragon's skull in the middle of fucking nowhere. The space packs so full there's scarcely any hot, humid air to breathe, and the male on the throne lifts his head. His gaze shifts between me and the creature at my side. Boasting a warm smile, he shakes his head, like he's wrestling with some kind of disbelief.
Kolu.
Yes, I say, cutting a glance around all the silent, wide-eyed onlookers. Folk keep saying that. Again, he looks at the female beside him. They press their heads together, both relishing in some form of relief I can see clear in their expressions. The male cups the head of their babe and plants a kiss on its brow. I pull my attention from the intimate moment that's strangely painful to watch, looking skyward, noticing the vast domed ceiling is strung with toothy skulls. Enough for me to come to the swift realization that these folk have no qualms in killing. We'll get on fine so long as they don't try to kill me. The maybe king stands, slow. Everyone in the room, bar the white-haired female, pounds their fists against their chests before dropping into a bow so low their mouths meet the floor again. I should probably do the same. Don't want to piss anyone off, given the fact that I'm incredibly outnumbered and still bound in a shackle of iron. I clear my throat, drop to my knees, then dip my head, holding the stance for a long moment. The male steps down from his throne, looking between me, the fate herder, and the two males who plucked me from the river, both now standing off to the side.
Hachtoth?
He asks, pausing. The male with the bird tattoo responds.
River Acht at Nedelai. River Acht. Ushurt? An.
A stretch of silence before the crowned male speaks again.
Tenai ask del anateni, tukateth aindeli, solach ta kolu.
My mind drifts, clawed fingers scrambling to cling to the now, the present. It all begins to remind me of a different place, a different time, when I was just as confused about what the hell was going on, my vocabulary failing to stretch further than a few huffing grunts I'd use to try and explain my needs. I recite my calming song internally as the maybe king moves back to his throne, a tall female stepping free of the parting crowd. She's clothed in lashings of copper body paint and a black beaded cloak that clatters as she strides toward us in long, hip-swaying steps. Her feet are bare, russet hair so long it smothers half her cloak. My gaze lifts to her eyes, and all the breath flees my lungs. They're white, unseeing. She looks my way, and I feel the opposite of unseen, shafted through with the sense that she sees far too much. Kolu, she whispers, smiling before raising both hands skyward. Kolu have koma.
after Nile Danu. Tukate!
The skull erupts with victorious yells and the pounding of fist to flesh, thumping hard like my rallying heart before the crowd becomes a bustle of motion, an energy about the space that prickles with anticipation. What in the creators have you gotten me into? I grind out to the beast at my side, who simply curls into a great mounded ball of fur, tucks its face beneath its tail, and appears to fall asleep, oscillating between its solid form and smudging at the sides. Maybe if I ignore it for a bit, it'll smudge out of existence entirely. Then I can leave. Two hulking males push free of the bellowing crowd, the larger of the pair so massive his hand could thread around my throat and crush it with a single squeeze, his hair the color of clay and reaching down between his shoulder blades. When he turns to bow at the folk occupying the thrones, I see his back is littered with dots, the image of a serpent coiled around his muscular frame more whole than blotted in places. The smaller male has brown hair and tawny, freckle-dusted skin, bearing a fawny call with its wings reaching up, draped over the warrior's shoulders. Both turn to me, dipping into an even deeper bow. I frown, my attention drifting to the female sitting on the throne, seeking answers in her eyes. All I find is a soft, comforting smile that makes me want to growl. I don't want comfort. I want cold, hard truths so I can work out what this fate herder has gotten me into and how I can remove myself from the situation the moment the creature drops its guard. Clopping sounds come to me from behind, and I look over my shoulder, seeing a big, leathery, six-legged creature being led down the path between the crowd. It has no ears, and three sets of beady black eyes that are clustered on either side of its long face, its jaw rocking as it chews something tucked between its molars. My frown deepens. I think it's a colt, but the ones I've seen have a thick, fluffy pelt. The creatures look so strange, naked. It makes a snorting sound, settling between myself and the two males watching me with intrigue. The milky-eyed female steps between me and the peaceful, masticating beast. With one swift motion, she rips a curved bronze blade from a sheath I hadn't noticed strapped to her leg and slits the animal's throat faster than I can track. My lungs seize, heart hammers. The poor animal lets out a shrill honk, its spilling blood caught in a bowl while my head goes light and airy. The beast is gently lowered to the ground, settling into a kneeling position that mimics my own. But still, dead? I waver. I've killed folk in the same manner. But seeing this poor, innocent creature loosen its final gurgling breath jostles something inside me. Makes me feel sick to the stomach. Fuck this. I'm out. I push to my feet and spin, stalking for the exit when the fate herder leaps in front of me, snarling. The crowd gasps, murmuring while I bare my teeth and growl back. It drops its head lower, prowls closer, urging me back toward my starting point. I'm growing less and less fond of you, I grind out, then shake my head and turn, storming back, toiling rage whipping at my ribs like ribbons of icy water. This verbal barrier is growing deeper by the second. If I don't find out what's going on soon, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. The male and female on the thrones frown at me, passing each other wary glances as I pick at the skin down the sides of my nail, watching the two warriors get painted in colk blood like it's something to be proud of. I try not to look at the dead animal. Hard when it's right there, still bleeding out in a bowl. A group of females converge around me like a fence, breaking off my view of the poor colk. Rows of them, until I'm hidden behind a circular wall of shapely, silk-garbed folk, most of whom have their backs turned. Every cell in my body stiffens, my eyes darting left and right. It takes me noticing the nervous glances being passed between the few folk still facing my way for me to realize I'm snarling. One dons a soft smile and steps forward.
Eta saiza, teten, aigne.
I don't understand any of this. She lifts her hands.
My name is Saiza. It is okay. No hurt.
Saiza's peaceful words do little to soothe my hackles, though I do wrangle my upper lip down over my teeth, thankful somebody can speak my language. This is good. I can work with this. Please tell me what's happening.
We have need to cleanse your body, she says, and my brows fly up.
Because I got vomit in my hair? I assure you, there's a very easy solution to that. Just lead me back to the river and toss me in. A small smile picks up one corner of her mouth, her sunburst eyes warming, reminding me of Rose.
Because you are Kolu, she whispers, pointing to some colorful marks painted on the leather beneath my feet, crouching to touch a black slash. Your hair is like the eyes of the Fonico, in your common tongue, she says, then points to an azure squiggle. You came to us on the eternal ribbon of blue, the River Acht.
Debatable. It looked pretty muddy to me. She traces a dark red line that coils around these markings like a rope binding a bouquet, spearing off to the right, cradling an impression of three moons. A saber scythe, a molten maw, a moon plume. Another line surrounds the entire image, silver like my unwanted companion coiled at my side, Saiza's finger tracing it.
It was foretold that the Fate Herder would bring you to us, that your offspring will tether the moons to the sky, she says with a hitch of awe. Forever.
My heart thuds to a stop, gaze rising to meet hers. Well, that's a load of spangle shit, I snap, jerking my chin at the paintings. I am no Kolu, and I will never carry offspring. The words are a weapon hacking through the space between us, their honed edge whetted on my stony heart. Never. The Fate Herder cracks an eye open, watching me. Never, I repeat, infusing every ounce of condemnation into my tone as I meet its slit stare. It blows a deep, rumbling breath that puffs against my face, and something settles within my chest, like it just reached through me and stroked my frazzled heartstrings. Might just be me, but I get the potent sense that it doesn't want me here for that.
I know not of this spangle you speak of, Saiza says. But the soul is never wrong. She drew this foretelling many cycles ago, and she herself has called you Kolu. The Fate Herder escorted you here, so the Tuka trial will proceed, as it was ordained by the creators themselves and approved by our Oa and Oa'i, king and queen in your tongue.
Another trial? I groan. Wonder how many more of these I have to stand through before I finally get to kill Rex Zaros. I glare at the problematic Fate Herder still watching me with lazy intrigue, its tail flicking back and forth. This is your fault. A vibrato dong rattles the air, its echo tapering before striking again, making my skin pebble. Another female steps into my circle of relative privacy, carrying a bowl of soapy water.
May I remove your clothes and prepare you for the trial? Saiza asks,
and I sigh, reaching for the hem of my oversized shirt. Sure, I mutter. Let's get this over with. The sooner I'm cleansed, the sooner I can be done with this trial, the sooner I can leave. Hopefully. A length of silk is passed around my protective ring of females, draped like a curtain before Saiza helps me out of my stolen clothes, then rinses my hair and sponges me down, painting lathered sweeps over my body to the daunting beat of the gong. "You have beautiful shape," she boasts, patting my skin down with an absorbent bit of cloth. "Such lovely curves." "Thanks," I mutter, mind elsewhere. Another fucking trial. What are they even trialing me for? It's not like I murdered any of them. I don't think. Perhaps they want to question me on my procreation intentions, given they think I'm going to magically produce some world-saving offspring? Better not. I take a tonic every phase that renders my womb inhospitable and have no intention of missing a dose. Streaks of blood are slicked across my skin by two other females before a long strip of blood-red silk is draped around my waist and knotted. Another shred is wrapped around my breasts, a string laden with copper rods pushed over my head and settled atop my bust. The gong sounds again, swiftly followed by a rapid foray of beats. The curtain drops, my band of privacy dissolves, and I see the two painted warriors watching me with honed regard. I'm about to ask Syza if they're the ones who were trialing me, but then the fate herder gets right in my face and nudges me to a stand, smearing some of the freshly painted blood. The crowd begins to disperse, funneling through the exit, my fluffy non-friend herding me in the same direction while uncertainty churns in my chest, making it feel tight, constricted. Pick something. Hone my focus. Don't fucking drown. I hum my calming tune, stare narrowing on the flow of folk before me as I count my steps, imagining each one brings me a little bit closer to that mystical fucking word that's always just out of reach. Freedom. Rave. Chapter 40. I'm herded through a warren of tunnels to the beat of the pounding gong, the thick, stagnant air becoming easier to inhale only moments before we spill into a big, dusty crater. My eyes bulge at the impossible height and width, large enough to cram four coliseums in here and still have room to move. It's as though something collided with the ground with such velocity the stone was displaced. Frowning, I recall Khan's earlier words.
"I spent most of my adolescence and a number of my later phases as a warrior of the Jokul clan. They have always nested close to these mountains, and recently claimed the crater formed by the fallen saber-scythe moon, Orva."
Guess that's what this is. Orva's crater. The small moon that fell a little over 8 phases ago. Folk pour into the space behind me and my prowling herder like gushing water, and my mind churns as I take in the chapped surroundings. There are tents dotted about the circumference, each sturdy structure consisting of 4 wooden poles plowed into the ground and a flap of patched leather stretched between them, forming a roof. They cast rectangular shadows occupied by woven rugs and many clay urns etched with glowing runes. Between the tents are a number of wooden racks stacked with weapons, most of which I've never seen before. Batons with a length of chain attached to the end, topped with spiked balls that look like they could shatter a skull, giant hooked swords, and small flat blades with pearly teeth mounted around the edge. So many weapons it makes Ruse's armory look juvenile. The crater's blanketed with a stretch of sand, though when I look at the grains sifting through my toes as I'm escorted around the perimeter, I notice gray shards amongst the rusty majority. Iron. To nullify those who can hear the elemental songs, no doubt. I frown, then cast my stare at the powdery sky threaded with the aurora's wispy silver tendrils, a scatter of inky saber-scythe moons perched in the distance. The crater's lip bears a crisscross of fraying rope heavy with skulls, most sun-bleached, one with shreds of decomposing meat and tufts of hair still hanging off the bone, a small tawny-colored bird perched on it, pecking at it. My heart skips a beat. Unlike the skulls in the tent we just came from, these ones are not from fallen animals. They have rounded heads and tapered canines, the fresher one retaining the rotten remnants of a tapered ear. They're fey. Creators. This is a battle ring. Is that what my trial is? Am I expected to fight? The tips of my fingers tingle, unease slithering through me like a serpent. The gong continues to sound as I'm guided further around the crater's circumference, past tent after tent, the folk before us threading into a large, dome-shaped one similar to those I saw in the chest cavity of the fallen dragon. Though this one's much bigger than them, and with many entrances, each framed by more of those intricately crafted archways. Syza stops before one opening, pulling a woven flower from one of the few baskets dotted around the tent, offering it to me.
Would you like to honor Orva?
My heart leaps so high up my throat, the next words are choked. The fallen Sabersythe? Syza nods, smiling softly.
He did not break apart upon impact. It took many warriors to roll him to the crater's side. We now pay him great respect in the hopes that no other moon will fall on our place of living.
Pulse pounding hard and fast, I accept the flower, cutting a glance back at my oscillating herder who cranks its muzzle and yawns again, skulking toward one of the doorways and curling into a sleepy ball. Guess that's permission. Swallowing, I push my hand between the tent's flaps, steady my breath, then step inside, drawing on the hot, humid air trapped beneath the pelts. My heart stops. Nestled amongst the sand before me is the most spectacular mottled moon. Like the Sabersythe was rolled through puddles of black and bronze ink that sunk into his small, overlapping scales. The backs of my eyes prickle as I take him in, his slight stature and lack of spikes a tribute to his adolescence. The dragon's left wing is swooped around his body, his sparsely tusked head dug only partially beneath it, still exposed enough that I can see almost an entire half of his face, his lid closed, looking like he just slipped into a quiet, peaceful sleep he'll never wake from. One of my frayed heartstrings pangs at the thought, because this dragon, he's so small, a little under twice my height, just big enough to support a rider, as evident by the damaged remnants of his saddle secured to his scaled back. It feels like a hand clasps around my neck and squeezes tight. Tighter. Although some dragons choose to soar into the sky when they feel their time has come to an end, to ball up and solidify, many don't make that decision on their own. Many are devastating victims of wars waged by us. Then there are the ones that don't make it into the sky at all, that die in the dirt or the snow or the sand, and rot where they lie, their blood fossilizing. Later, mined by us. Used by us. I reach out a hand, pausing just before my fingers are able to brush across the stony scales as a mourning presence deep inside urges me to turn around, to stop looking. No, not an urge. A gentle, probing request. A plea. Clearing my throat, I drop to a kneel and settle my woven flower on the ground at the dragon's base, like others are doing, adding to the growing piles of offerings, old and new. Then I listen to that plea, respect its desperate, mournful request. I turn around, and I don't look back. I'm led upon a raised dais beneath a patch of shade, relief for my already chapped skin. I look at my feline non-friend who coils up beside me, releasing a satiated rumble. It tucks its face beneath its long, bushy tail and appears to go to sleep. I'm obviously not expected to fight, otherwise it would have herded me right into the ring, surely. Folk finish paying their respects to Orva, then pack into the slabs of shadow. The two blood-soaked males kneel before me, the larger one lifting a necklace up over his head. He bows, hand outstretched, and my eyes narrow on the black pendant engraved with a serpent, the same image as the one dotted on his back. The pendant hangs from his clenched fist, swaying in the dusty wind, reminding me of the one Khan wears, though less intricate, less alluring. Sizer leans close to my ear.
You must accept Hawk's Malmer now.
Why?
It is an important part of the trial, she says,
and I frown, reaching out. He drops it into my open palm, the coil of string coarse against my skin. The dark-haired male extends his, too, a tawny diadem bearing an embossed fawny caw, not as polished or finely crafted as the other piece.
Now accept Zaran's and set both Malmer on the rug before you.
I do as she said, my frown deepening as both males bang their fists against their chest three times, then stand, dispersing toward separate weapon racks.
So we're going to watch them fight?
I query, and Sizer nods.
Of course.
What does this have to do with my trial?
This is your trial, she says,
and my brows bump up.
I just have to sit here and watch them knock each other around?
She nods. I frown, very little of the unease loosening from my chest. Zaran chooses a partially curved sword that reminds me of the serpent on his opponent's back, while Hawk picks a bludgeoning stick with metal spikes sprouting from its bulbous head, a weapon which seems to suit the monstrous male. My gaze stabs right beneath another large tent where the Oa and Oa-E sit upon bloodstone thrones, the latter being fanned with a massive flat leaf while she continues to feed her squirming babe. The soul is there too, sitting on a smaller throne to the Oa's right. Their combined attention is firmly cast on the males who make for the ring's flattened epicenter. Wind churns my hair into a lash of black tendrils, but fails to whip the heat from the air, to ruffle the tension stretched across the crater, as Huck and Zaran begin to circle each other in wide, skulking strides, their eyes locked, upper lips peeled back from bared teeth. It feels like they're stalking those same churning steps inside my gut, while the gong continues to bang to a chest-thumping beat that rattles through my ribs. Zaran dips low, growling as he charges Hawk, curved blades slashing for his gut so fast mine plummet. This is no practice match. They're fighting to kill. Fuck. Zaran is booted back. He lumps onto his ass, barely rolling out of the way in time for Hawk to pound his club into the ground instead of directly upon his opponent's chest with a mighty, muscle-rippling heave, a burst of sand spraying skyward. I flinch, watching the males slash, hack, dodge, and sway, tearing deep gashes in each other's leather pants and skin, splashing the sand red. Unease wraps its bind around my chest again, pulling it tighter, tighter. Something's not right.
I'm confused. What does this have to do with me?
Raising a single brow, Sizer flicks me an amused look.
Everything, Kolu. They're fighting for you.
My heart drops so fast my next words choke out.
They're fighting to the death to entertain me? Are you serious?
She frowns.
No, not to entertain.
Then what?
This is a Tuka trial,
she says, attempting to smooth some of my unruly hair behind my tapered ear. She gestures with her other hand toward the males now grappling in the sand, fists throwing. More blood sprays with the ferocity of their violent swings. They are fighting for the great honor of being bound to you. The honor of building a life and producing offspring with Kolu is the greatest one could wish for. To pin the moons to the sky for good will ensure the future for offspring of the entire Jokol clan, and their offspring, and theirs. To secure such peace is a great privilege. Her speech flays me, little by little, slicing skin, sinew, and bone in swift, icy blows. No. No, 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 no. Hawk uses Zaran's own blade to hack through his opponent's neck in short, slitting increments, cracking his neck halfway through. The rest of it tears free from his motionless body now splayed across the sand, and all the breath bursts from my lungs, like Claude just siphoned it free. Crouched upon the lifeless corpse like a feasting beast, Hawk fists Zaran's blood-matted hair and lifts the head like a trophy, roaring triumphantly as he shakes it, blood slipping from the gory wound. The crowd roars, folk bashing their chests with fisted blows, the gong sounding in rhythm to my thrashing heartbeat. Hawk sets his eyes on me, and all the heat escapes my body, violent unease exploding in my chest. No, no, no. Hawk is your victor, Siza murmurs against my ear, and my thoughts churn like a tangled length of barbed threads. You are lucky. Aside from his Rosker and the Oa, he is our strongest fighter. There will now be great celebration, after which he will escort you to his tent and show you the pelts of his kills, upon which you will hopefully make many strong sons and daughters in the cycle to come, once your bond grows sturdy. Sons and daughters. A heaviness settles on my chest and belly, making me feel crushed, yet somehow so incredibly empty. Failing to pull breath into my lungs, I slid a glance at the herder, now almost smudged entirely from view. So close to turning invisible that I'm certain I could shove my hand straight through it. I'm not surprised it's hiding. It should be fucking ashamed of itself. I'm just about to tell it as much when Hawk lumbers forward, kicking up blows of sand with his charging steps. He thumps Zaran's head on the ground before my dais. I gasp, gaze dropping to the male's lax face, to the fleshy mess of tissue, tendons, and bone, the blood puddling upon the sand. I'm still looking at it, trying to work out how the fuck I got here, scarcely garbed, painted in blood, and staring at a severed head, when Hawk kneels before me. He plucks his sooty Malmer from the rug and reaches for me, trying to thread the loop over my head, like a shackle for my neck. Rage explodes beneath my ribs. No, I snarl, jerking back. Hawk's eyes flare with a mix of confusion and scarcely veiled wrath. He growls, grips me by the shoulder, and jostles me closer to the tune of rumbling murmurs. I fling my head forward, feeling his nose crack from the force, whipping back to see blood spurting from his flared nostrils. The world around us stills. I shove to my feet, scurrying backward while he stalks into my patch of shade, growling through the stream of blood pouring from his face. I will fight for myself! A hush falls upon most of the crowd, buffeted only by a few gasps. Perhaps from those who understand the common tongue. Hawk pauses, gaze darting to Siza, who translates my frantic request, his brow becoming a bunched mantle above his stormy, sunburst eyes. He looks to the Oa.
Geishtana Katuin.
His words are a brutal clash of sounds, tension thickening. The Oa seems to deliberate, his wide-eyed Oa-e paler than she was before. She looks at me, her babe now bunched and squealing at her breast. Her lips move, soft words pulled straight to my ears on a gentle twirl of wind.
What are you doing?
She can speak my language, then. She can also speak with Claude. Interesting.
I do not choose this, I seethe,
the ruddy silk bound around my waist ruffling in the wind, my entire body taut with the urge to move, to fight. My gaze drops to my fate herder, now watching me through slit eyes that are far more solid-looking than the rest of its body. Though it's still coiled, I sense its welling unease in the air between us, like it's waiting to see what foot I'll step out of line next. But if this is my fate, if this is what it was leading me to, I don't accept it. Not one single bit. Over the last few Aurora cycles, I've cradled my Essie while she slipped away, said goodbye to knee, been shot with an iron pin, and received so many lashes I passed out from the pain. I've been fed to a thunder of dragons, nearly swallowed, been turned down by the only male who's ever made my heart skip a beat, was swept off a cliff, and I am at my wit's end. I am not accepting this male's Malmer, no matter how exceptional his battle skills are. I'd rather slam this small disc so far into his skull it cleaves through bone and punches into his squishy brain than bear this male's children. I have no idea who he is, and I don't want to. I don't want to grow a child, first and fucking foremost. If I have to go to war with the Fate Herder to avoid this, I will. Beautiful, mythical beast or not. A dribble of Huck's blood slithers down the line of my nose, my upper lip peeling back. I will fight for myself. My words hiss across the crater. The Oae swallows, leaning toward her male, whispering something against his ear. He looks at me, gaze shifting to Huck, to my sleepy herder, then back to me. He says something to his Oae, and she releases a shuddered breath, gaze dropping to her babe nuzzled amongst folds of gold silk. Silence beats by. She sweeps a hand over the youngling's brow, then clears her throat, though her words still come out choked as she looks me in the eye and says,
"So long as the Fate Herder does not prevent you from entering the ring, we will not oppose your decision."
Rave. Chapter 41. Syza paints me in more parchment-thin streaks of blood while I stand statue still, while I watch Hawk stalk back and forth across the sandy battlefield, his gaze firmly cast on me as he sucks and shoves deep breaths through bared teeth like a ferocious, meat-eating animal chomping at the bit to launch forward and chow down on his prey. I sigh, nudging my shackle into a more comfortable position on my arm. The escape plan was simple. Climb down the cliff and follow the river to the wall, sticking to the shade as best I could. Charm a molten maw. Hunt Rex Zaros and torture him to death. Now I have to behead this male only 2 steps from the starting line. I cut another glare at my near-invisible herder, currently little more than a rumbling metallic smudge, cursing the moment it leapt into my life. Syza swirls another streak of blood across my midriff.
You don't like the man who won for you?
Won for me? That's not what this was. I do not choose this male, I rebuke, and she frowns, confusion swirling in her pretty sunburst eyes. She drags the brush down my nose, over my lips, chin, and neck.
He has hunted many wild grook, great tusked beasts almost impossible to bring down. His tent is large, wrapped and lined with many of their pelts, proof of his famed strength. You are Kolu. Your offspring will tether moons to the sky and bring great peace. Do you not want a strong sire?
I bristle. how much clearer do I need to be? There is no reality where I lift this silk and let that male into my body. No reality where I step a single fucking foot in his impressive tent. No reality where I bare my throat to him, the tilt of deep, primal respect. I'd rather him slit it from ear to ear. I don't want this male, this title, this anything, I growl, cutting another sharp stare at the smudge of metallic air particles beside me, hoping the fate herder is paying real good attention. My body is mine, and I will do with it as I please. Nothing more. Size's face blanches, and she drops her eyes, dipping her head in submission. I understand, Kolu. We cradle different values. I apologize for overstepping. It's okay. I just want to be done. Gone. Siza passes me a small smile, then paints more swirls down the length of my arm while I continue to observe Hawk's movements, studying the way his body shifts, the way he eases his weight from foot to foot, the damage already inflicted on his hulking form. Do you know how to fight? Siza asks, and I bob my head. Like a warrior fights? My gaze flicks to her, brows bumping together. She pauses. Nobody fights like those from the Jokol clan. We are the strongest in the Botanic Plains. This is why we earned this land where no moon will fall again, she says, gesturing to the craters surrounding us. All Hawk must do is get you to submit, and the trial is over. You must kill him to be the victor, to earn the right to slay Wild Grok and to build your own tent. Then you must cut off his head. I don't bother telling her I have no interest in killing Wild Grok and building a tent. Once I kill Hawk, I'll retrace the path back to the river, then follow it until it freezes and eventually meets the wall. If the Fate Herder tries to stop me? Well, hopefully it doesn't come to that. I love animals, and I loathe the thought of killing them. I've taken the heads of males before, I murmur past tight lips, though obviously not nearly enough, considering how cursed I absolutely, without a doubt, 100% am. This will be no different. A stretch of tension-riddled silence ensues while Siza continues preparing me for the looming battle, my copper necklace lifted and set to the side. My hair is brushed, then threaded into a braid that falls almost to my hips, tied off with a stretch of string while the gong continues to sound. Once I'm fully prepared, I cut a glance at my Fate Herder transitioning into view again, opening its eyes to look at me. Those slit pupils swell as I hold its fierce, intense stare. Don't try to stop me. All I get is a tail flick, as if to say, off you go, get back in the ring where you belong. Do your job. I bristle, the entire congregation seeming to hold its breath as I lift my chin and charge from the shadow, refusing to pay the beast any more heed. Not a single drop of it. It's not going to stop me. I know it's not. I should have known this is where it wanted me all along, back in a battle ring, shedding blood. Perhaps fate, whoever fate is, needs Hawk and Zaran taken out for some reason, so the herder deviated me here to do the deed. Whatever it's for, it's hard to shake the sense that I'm being used again. I should be used to it by now. I move toward a weapon rack, lifting a few off the hooks that I quickly discover are too top-heavy or too thick in the handle for my fingers to securely wrap around. I pick up a small iron axe with a bound leather pommel that feels comfortable in my grip, tossing it from hand to hand before using it to shear off the excess material of my shirt so it doesn't get in my way. Tossing the blood-tinged scrap of silk to the wind, I move into the ring, beginning a slow, steady circle around the outer perimeter while maintaining Hawk's eye contact. He's swapped his spiked club for one that's smooth, no doubt reluctant to disfigure me in his efforts to earn the right to bind with me. Such spangle shit. I crack my neck from side to side, steadying my breaths until they're deep and slow. Calm. Waiting for him to make the first move. Hawk shakes his head, muttering beneath his breath before his face distorts with a bellowing roar. He lunges, kicking up sand as he powers across the arena like a charging beast. I wait until he's so close I can feel the vibrations of his hammering steps, can see the orange flints in his bold yellow eyes. I flick to the side, bending my upper body away from his swinging mace to the collective gasp from the crowd. I spin, whipping around with a slash of my axe. Blood sprays, my weapon slitting through skin and flesh, nicking bone, severing the side of his abdomen. Not deep enough to kill, I realize, scurrying back, gaze firmly locked on my roaring opponent while fisting a handful of sand. Hawk slaps his hand against the wound, inspecting the slick of blood now coating his palm, a flash of undiluted shock kindling his eyes, followed by a flare of rage violent enough to sizzle skin. I've seen males look at me like that, right before I've pierced their hearts. The look of wounded pride. I don't give him time to digest the emotion, charging, dodging left and right, drawing his attention to my feet, hoping he boggles over the direction of my next move rather than what my hands are doing. With a flick of my wrist, I toss my scoop of sand into the air as Claude lashes the wind into a gust, spraying it into his eyes, helping me of her own accord. Hawk roars. I smile. Love you too, Claude. Miss you. While Hawk bats at his eyes, I dive upon his back, wrapping my arm around his throat, just about to slash my axe across his jugular when he grips my arm and hulls his body forward. I feel my blade make contact as I'm whipping through the air, bracing myself for impact so that when I collide with the ground, I'm immediately rolling out of the way, marginally avoiding a blind swing of his mace that bashes the ground at my back. I leap to my feet, seeing him scurry back, patting at the too shallow slit in his throat. Damn. He leers at me through bloodshot eyes, seething, bellowing boisterous words while he reaches into the pocket of his pants, probably trying to check that his balls still exist. Not wanting to give him too much time to recalibrate, I charge again, dodging left and right, a few long leaps away when he pulls his hand free. I see the thin, aureate tendril dangling from his fingers too late, already throwing my body in that direction, axe swinging as he thrusts his hand forward. As a small, hissing serpent is tossed through the air between us, maw bared, fangs stretched. My weapon slits through Hawk's thigh just as the serpent strikes my chest with a bite of sting. I roll, tumbling across the ground, throwing myself onto my feet again and backstepping, watching the small serpent wiggle off through the sand, practically blending with the grains. What the fuck? I cup the throbbing hurt on the upper swell of my left breast, not taking my eyes off the asshole now smirking at me from a handful of long leaps away. Like he's already won, despite the fact that he's bearing three fresh slash marks that are leaking blood all over the sand. Who goes around carrying those in their pocket? A sudden flash of dizziness makes me wobble, and I throw my hand out to balance myself to the tune of the crowd's gasps and murmurs. Creators, that serpent spiked me with its venom. Hawk chuffs, then charges. I charge too, because there's no way I'm standing stationary while this fuck comes at me again. Hand fisted around my axe, I consider which two ribs I'm going to slice between, dodging to the left, another tip of dizziness making the ground rock with such violence I stumble a step. His weapon collides with my shoulder, and a burst of pain explodes across my collarbone, down into my elbow. Scurrying back, I cradle my arm close to my body, gaping at this stalking male, sawing breath into my parched lungs. What was that? My dodge was perfect, until it wasn't. Another wobble, and a bulb of fear explodes behind my ribs, realization dawning like aurora ribbons rising in my belly, tangling around my spine, wriggling up my throat. The venom is moving through my system fast. Too fast. The entire world seems to tilt sideways, my steps floundering with it, forcing me to plant my hand on the sand to catch myself. A flash of satisfaction ignites Hawk's features, his lips curling into a victorious smirk. "You dishonorable fuck!" I snarl, charging, dodging side to side, finally dipping low and sliding along the ground. I whip my axe out and slash it through his calf muscle in the same instance his weapon whooshes past the side of my face. He roars, catapulting forward in stomping stumbles, taking himself far enough away from me that he's able to check the laceration in his pants, the fresh wound pouring blood down the back of his leg. His eyes bulge with disbelief. "Couldn't swallow the fact that you were going to lose to a female half your size, huh?" I push to my feet, still sneering. "I will fucking ruin you, then boot your severed head all the way to the fade," I growl, charging again. The world jerks, taking me with it. My hand flies out to catch myself, only for it to plummet straight through what I thought was the ground. Heart lurching, I stagger into an awkward sideways crouch, catching myself on the actual ground, my heart pumping hard. Fuck. I meet Hawk's slashing gaze as he tests his weight on his injured leg. This is not good. I need to finish this. Fast. I shove up, prowling in a wide arc Hawk mimics in limping strides. With my stare firmly cast on my snarling opponent, I pick at the leather bind wrapped around the pommel of my axe, unraveling the taut, sturdy length of material. "Come on, asshole. Make a move." He charges. So do I, converging toward him at a rapid pace. A few long lunges away, I whip my hand back and toss my axe. It slices through the air with the speed of a lightning strike, propelling straight for his chest. He moves faster than the flying weapon, dodging it with a dramatic dip of his immense body. The axe whirs past him, and I leap, latching onto him, clambering up his compromised form and kicking my foot against the gouge in the back of his leg. Hawk tips his head and roars, dropping to his knees with such heft the ground trembles, the crowd gasping as I bind the leather ribbon around his thick neck and tighten. Tighten. Choking sounds rupture from his no-doubt gaping mouth, fuel to spur me on. Hawk may look like a mountain and move like he slid from the womb swinging, but his neck is still delicate. He still needs to breathe. I pour all my strength into keeping the bind taut, the muscles in my arms and chest ripped with a tearing burn from the immense effort. Hawk claws at his throat, failing to get his fingers beneath the leather, instead jerking his entire body forward, using his heft to his advantage. Anticipating the maneuver, I latch my legs around his waist, becoming a willing passenger to the shift. We collide with the ground, our left shoulders boring into the hot sand. He lurches, spine arching, trying to shuck me off his body. I tighten my legs and fists, moving with his frantic motions, clinging to him like a life-sucking parasite. The strips of leather cut into my palms, my lips pull back from my teeth, my brain pumping so full of blood that my head goes light and airy. The world rocks around us, like we're on a raft in a lake of undulating sand, and I just know that this is my only shot, that if I don't get him now, I'm fucked. "Die, you corrupt fuck," I growl, pouring the last of my strength into another wrench of my arms, further tightening the bind. He reaches back, swatting around my head, clawing at my braid. He yanks it, but I can tell by the lack of force that he's fading. Warm anticipation bubbles in my chest. My scalp burns from his desperate tugs that grow weaker. Weaker. All the tension loosens from his body, and his head flops to the side with the drop of his arm. Relief flurries through me like a snowstorm, pouring up my throat as a whimpered exhale. I did it. He's out. Now to cut off his head. Battling for breath, I look through the haze of heat waves, straight into the sun's harsh glare, locating my weapon that looks both close and incredibly far away. I release the bind, shoving at Hawk's big, limp body with my wounded hands, trying to wiggle my leg out from where it's crushed beneath him. Finally inching free, I clamber to a wobbly stand, the entire world tipping, swaying, the axe as one, then splitting again. I focus on one and charge forward, folding over to swipe it up, scooping only grains of sand, the illusion disintegrating like it's made of fog. Groaning, I tumble forward, catching myself in an unsteady crouch, the bite on my breast thumping with a deep, destructive ache that spurs my hunger to hack through his throat, to fist his hair, raise my gory trophy, then walk out of here and never look back. Gaze whipping around, I seek the weapon. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? My stare latches onto its honed head, glinting in the sun, cushioned in the sand just to my right. Another flurry of relief ices my insides. I stretch out, reaching. A shadow burdens my peripheral, the only warning I get before something hard cracks against the side of my head. Pain explodes in my temple as my body soars too fast, too slow. Lights flash across my waning vision, and I collide with the sand so hard my teeth impale my tongue, something warm spilling down the side of my face while I stare at the crater's sheer side. Unblinking. Unmoving. I just lie. Lids heavy. Head heavier. Feeling weaker and more brittle than I did when I woke confused in that cell so many Aurora cycles ago. Way back at the very beginning.